Now you go to St. Louis, Dublin, Missouri, Oklahoma City, looks mighty pretty, you see. Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Verona, Kingston, Boston, San Bernardino, won't you get hip to the Cali tip when you make that California trip. Get your kicks on Route 66.
That's 90-year-old blues musician Eddie Tigner giving us an a cappella snippet of Route 66, a trademark song in his live performances.
Route 66 is one of the most popular songs of our nation. It's one of the gold standards, and this guy has the best version ever. There's not a better version of Route 66, more light, and he doesn't copy it like that. He has his complete own take on how he phrases the words, his attack on the melody. It's genius. It's utter genius.
That's Tim Duffy, and he should know. His life's work has given him an encyclopedic knowledge of Southern blues and folk music culture. And that work has helped hundreds of struggling, aging, and often impoverished blues and folk artists get back on their feet and jumpstart their careers. Artists like Eddie Tigner, Ironing Board Sam, Etta Baker, and Danny Mudcat Dudek, to name a few. This is Crazy Good Turns. We tell stories about people who do amazing things for others, and I'm your host, Brad Shaw. Today we'll hear the story of Music Maker Relief Foundation, a nonprofit that Tim Duffy and his wife Denise co-founded more than 20 years ago. We'll hear more about what Music Maker does, but Tim's own backstory is a pretty wild one worth telling. He grew up in a small town called Woodbridge, Connecticut, just outside of New Haven. Music was a big influence in his life from the start, thanks to a father who loved music and exposed the family to a constant and diverse array of artists, bringing home more than 20 new records a month for the family to listen to.
Robert Johnson, Leadbelly, Bessie Smith, Rachmaninoff, you know, Louis Armstrong, Elvis Gerald, Baroque music, you know, just a very musical Bob Dylan. All the Bob Dylan records would come. We'd buy them. Dad would bring them into the houses that came in.
But amid this smorgasbord of music genres, it was Southern blues that really grabbed Tim.
I was just enamored by Southern culture. And there was a record my dad had called Instrumental Music from the Southern Appalachians. And it's one of the greatest, the greatest instrumental record of Piedmont blues from North Carolina, and had great influence on me and my life. It was recorded by a great folklorist named Paul Clayton, and that music on there influenced the 60s folk generation.
So Tim immersed himself in Southern blues culture and in his spare time honed his hockey skills. He says by the time he was 16, he was good enough to get recruited to several Ivy League schools. But he traded in his hockey stick for a guitar, and after graduating from high school in 1981, he enrolled in the Appalachian Music Program at Warren Wilson College, a small liberal arts school in Swannanoa, North Carolina. The program required Tim to spend at least 15 hours a week traveling the South and recording local blues and folk artists, many of whom hadn't performed in decades. He took every Appalachian study class, a banjo class, and even moved into an old mountain cabin to better his guitar playing.
I did a thing a lot of young guitar players do called woodshedding. I stayed up there in the mountains in that cabin and started to really teach myself how to finger pick guitar. I was just turned on. I had to learn Creole Bell and Stack a Lee, and I sat there in that cabin and just learned how to play that music.
Tim said he loved the Appalachian Music Program and the exposure it gave him to so many artists that he grew to love and admire. But when his course requirements started stretching beyond music, he bailed.
I was there for 3 terms, and then they wanted me to take biology. And I hadn't flunked biology since 9th grade. And, you know, so that wasn't going to happen.
Wanting to finish his degree, but not really interested in the traditional approach, Tim discovered the Friends World College in Kenya, where he lived from 1983 to 1987, with occasional trips home to care for his sick dad. As he did in the Appalachian Mountains, Tim immersed himself in the local culture, living in a rooftop apartment in Mombasa with a local father and his 2 sons. Tim used a portion of his allowance from home to help put the sons through school. And as you'd expect, he really got into the local music scene.
And there was a oud player named Zen Alabdin, whose music, you know, just, you know, I fell deeply in love with, very passionate about, and really moved me spiritually and in every kind of way. I just was a total fan of this guy's music. And I became studying the oud and became part of his surrogate family.
What's an oud?
An oud is like an Arabic lute. It goes back to the Bible times of David. You know, that David played his harp. He was probably playing an oud.
It was during his time in Kenya that Tim says he grew up and developed a desire to help others.
I thought I knew poverty in Appalachia, but the poverty in Kenya was something I had never witnessed before. And to see people so poor and go to Mathari Valley, it's one of the biggest shanty towns in Nairobi, and see naked men on all fours sticking their head into a garbage heap and chewing like a cow. You know, stuff like that, when you wake up in the morning, kind of affects you. It's like being aware of how short your life is and what do you want to do while you're here.
During a trip back to the States for his 23rd birthday, Tim met and fell in love with his now wife, Denise DeRocher. A kindred spirit, she moved back to Kenya with Tim, where they lived together in that rooftop apartment for the next 9 months while Tim finished school. After graduation, Denise, who was a garment pattern maker, convinced him to move with her to North Carolina so she could look for a job in the garment industry. So they packed up for Asheville, where the two moved in with an old mountain musician friend of Tim's named Samuel Turner Stevens.
He was a nice man, lived in a little cabin with he had running water but no heat. He would lovingly fill a Prestone antifreeze bottle with warm water with a little plastic gasket he made to, you know, warm up the bed for us. You know, he was a very nice man.
Denise ultimately landed a job in Winston-Salem, and at the same time, Tim was invited to enter the folklore graduate program at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, where he was introduced to legendary bluesman James Stevens, better known as Guitar Slim. The two hung out a lot and became friends, and Slim introduced Tim to all his blues buddies in the area.
Within, you know, a few years, I met, and it started, I met Guitar Gabriel, Captain Luke, Micah Vine Hayes, Preston Fulp, Jehu Rory, Sam Red, right within 10 miles of each other. And it was this great little enclave of these great blues musicians. And it was like, wow, the blues is alive and well.
Tim recorded live performances of virtually every artist he met. And as a skilled photographer, he took beautiful pictures of the musicians too. Through his travels and interactions, though, he also noticed a pattern. In addition to being quite old, many were living in abject poverty with no viable means to meet even their most basic needs.
When I met these blues artists, knowing a little bit of the record industry, there were, even at the top of it, these guys never made any money. They were too old to tour.
As Tim was pondering a way to help all these guys, he ran into an old friend of his father's named Mark Levinson, whom you audiophiles will recognize as one of the deans of high fidelity technology and sound systems. Tim shared his recordings with Mark, who was blown away by the music, and the two started brainstorming ways to both give the recordings a broader audience and help the artists who made them. Tim said Mark came up with the idea and the name for Music Maker Relief Foundation, which he and Denise officially founded in 1994. With Mark's help, they created a small commemorative book of Tim's photographs and packaged it with a CD of the artist's music, which Levinson had remastered with his high-end audio gear. They named it a patrons pack and sold it to Levinson's wealthy retail customers, with proceeds going to Music Maker.
And he would sell it to them for $100, but it was very common for someone to say, oh, Tim's doing something, here's $5,000. He taught me how to fundraise. You know, Livio Kamatsi, one of the board members of BASF, gave me a $30,000 digital reel-to-reel recorder.
Tim and Denise both had day jobs at the time. Denise in the garment industry, Tim with a startup record label that gave him a salary, a budget, and a van to cruise around the South and record 10 blues records a year, which he did for 2 years. In addition to producing and distributing the artist's records, Tim would also work on their behalf to arrange paying gigs for them, and along the way, use donations from Music Maker to help with basic living expenses like medical and heating bills and buying food. By the year 2000, their efforts had become so widespread throughout the South that the two quit their day jobs to devote their efforts full-time to Music Maker, where Tim is now executive director and Denise is managing director. Over the years, Music Maker has assisted more than 300 artists, issued more than 150 CDs of their music, and reached a live audience of more than 1 million people in 40 states and 17 countries through the live shows they produce. And through their Musician Sustenance Program, they've provided hundreds of artists with monthly stipends for food, shelter, and medical care, supplied them with emergency aid in times of crisis, and connected them with government and nonprofit resources for further help. One such artist is blues guitarist Robert Finley.
Do you remember the first time you met Robert?
Robert, I met him in 2015 in Helena, Arkansas at the King Biscuit Blues Festival. He was playing on the street for tips, and everyone else of the street performers had really fancy PAs and could be heard really well. And Robert had this really funky 1978 or, you know, 70s version karaoke machine that sounded horrible. Like that. And then I got up close to him, and he immediately knew he was one of the greatest soul blues singers I ever heard. And the songs were hysterical. And I knew he had written them because they were so great. If someone else had written them, I would have heard them by then. They were just great. And I asked him, did you write these songs? And he said, yeah. And I said, man, you're the greatest soul singer. He didn't know me very well. I took his picture, and I got his number. And then Aaron here at the office, he started calling him, I started calling him, and we invited him up here to Music Maker.
Unlike all the other artists Music Maker has helped, Robert, who's 62 years old, was fairly new to the music business, having been a carpenter all of his adult life. He had to abandon that career when he lost his sight to glaucoma, and having been an avid guitar player his whole life, started busking on the streets to pay the bills. Tim was blown away by Robert's talent and offered to help him get his new music career started. The Music Maker team brought him into their North Carolina studio and recorded Robert playing and singing 27 songs, most of them original tunes he had written. Tim enticed his friends at Big Legal Mess Records to record and distribute a full-length record of Robert's music, but he was still a little skeptical that the Music Maker guys were legit. So Tim and his team jumped in the car and drove to Robert's hometown of Bernice, Louisiana.
And I said, we need to go to church with this guy. We need to go sit and drink beer with him for a week. We just need to become real to him and his community as fast as we can for this relationship to work. So we drove down there and we spent 6 days, made a video, bought a bunch of chicken, had a big community barbecue pickup and met people. And then soon after that, he went off and did the record.
That record is called Age Don't Mean a Thing, and its success has Robert playing all over the world, from Los Angeles and New York to two tours in Europe. Thanks to Music Maker, Robert feels like he's gotten a second lease on life, one that he's going to make the most of.
I think we're going to knock a home run on what we're trying to do. Like I say, I'll forever be grateful to the Music Maker Relief Foundation, always be supportive to it. And I would ask that anybody else that loves music and has a heart for struggling musicians to support it too. I wouldn't be where I am today if it had not been for the push and the opportunity.
And as for Eddie Tigner, who opened the show with Route 66, he's been a part of the Music Maker family for nearly 20 years. They've provided him with grants for prescription medicine, food and home repairs, and they've released two albums together. He too has toured the U.S. and Europe, and he's got a standing gig every Thursday night at Fat Matt's Rib Shack in Atlanta, where he plays well into the early morning hours. And at 90, he's not showing any signs of slowing yet.
It makes me feel alive. I mean, really, you know? Makes me feel alive like there's nothing else that I would rather do than play music.
This episode was personal for me for a couple reasons. First, I love and appreciate music, and I have since I was a kid. I can't play an instrument, but music is pretty much always on in the background of my life. And two of my sons are professional touring musicians, so I can relate to the difficulties of that world. Sleeping on floors and couches, getting gypped by stingy club owners, dealing with cranky sound guys, scuffling with other bands, driving 9 hours to play a 45-minute set, then waking up and doing it all over again. Like Eddie and Robert and so many other struggling artists, young and old, my sons aren't famous and they may never be. but they're also similar in that they can't imagine doing anything else. They put up with things I never would to give me something I value deeply, a good song. I'm Brad Shaw, and thanks for listening to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. Go to crazygoodturns.org to learn more about or donate to Music Maker Relief Foundation and to submit your ideas for extraordinary people and organizations we should feature. And stay connected with us between episodes by following us on Facebook and Twitter. You make me want to dance to the music. You make me want to dance to the groove. You make me want to dance to the music. Ooh, baby, girl, I want to dance with you. Yeah, yeah. You might have noticed that we found some great music to support our podcast. In fact, all of this episode's music comes from Music Maker artists, including Eddie and Robert. We've provided a Spotify playlist of the full tracks on our website so you can take a longer listen, which we hope you'll do. And if you're a band with a song we should consider featuring, you can submit it on our website too. We're also asking you to help us grow our audience this year and bring our inspiring stories to more people. You see, Crazy Good Turns is a nonprofit itself. And like most nonprofits, we don't have a big marketing budget, so the single most important way for us to gain increased visibility is to crank up our ratings and reviews on iTunes. So we're setting a goal of 1,000 iTunes ratings by the end of the year, and we're asking you and the nonprofits we feature to unleash your creativity, passion, and your social networks to help us get there. And because we're all part of this virtuous and self-reinforcing circle of giving, we'll give a $50,000 grant at the end of the year to the featured nonprofit that helps us the most. With your help, we know we'll get there and then some. Crazy Good Turns is audio engineered by Stephen Key. Music supervision and mixing by Schooler School in Los Angeles. And a special thanks to Megan Basinger. Take care and let's connect again soon. It must have been that bad.